Hi, Spring fans. Welcome to a beautiful podcast. I'm your host, Spring Developer Advocate Josh Long, and this show is all about the real heroes behind Spring and its ecosystem.
Listening to a beautiful podcast, and this is a weekly podcast where I, your humble host, Josh Long, talk to interesting friends in the community on a weekly basis with a live microphone. How cool is that? And today, of course, is no exception. Today, I am fresh off of a long flight back from Europe. I'm now back in San Francisco. Tomorrow, my kid graduates from middle school. That's super cool. And so, lots to talk about, but you know what? I'm feeling like I want to get this amazing interview underway. I had a great discussion with an old friend, Veronica Lopez, that is to say a longtime friend. Veronica is one of the smartest people I know. She's a legend in the Go language community and the Kubernetes community, a former physicist who decided to slum it become an engineer something of a celebrity in the cloud space. Just really good to catch up. We caught up at GoToCon in Chicago a month ago or so, and really enjoyed the conversation. And as always, I certainly hope that you do as well. All right, good stuff. Now we're live. That took a while. We had way too long, way too much stuff going on.
Yeah.
That had nothing to do with the podcast before we got to the podcast.
No gossip at all.
No, none of that.
Just catching up. Very serious
just
stuff.
All preparation, you know? Checking, talking about science
mm-hmm.
and the facts
and on the internet. Code.
Right, yeah. Lots of code. I wish it was. But so the reason that it doesn't make any sense is because we code different things, you and I.
I know.
From different worlds.
Yeah.
And so that's not a likely story, but I would like to learn more about what you do, and that's I'm super happy we finally get to have a recorded chat, right?
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
You would probably not want to record our previous chat.
No, definitely no. Those are ridiculous. Those are wonderful. But yeah, maybe a drink or two was had, so I might have also forgotten some of them. But anywho, so who are you, Veronica? Tell the audience who you are.
I am Veronica Lopez, or Veronica Lopez.
Yeah.
And I'm a senior software engineer, and that I have been working a lot with distributed systems out of accident, out of necessity. And it turns out that I have liked them a lot.
Yeah.
And I am very active in the Go community, something that I have tried to get away from. But it always chases me, and this is not a complaint. Like, yeah. It has been, like, literally like that. In my spare time, I like to do a lot of Elixir, Erlang, the Beam community stuff, and they have adopted me, like, as an honorary member now.
Oh.
But for my professional stuff life, I do Go, and most recently, like, Kubernetes
yeah.
stuff. That was also an accident, which took me like a while to get comfortable with, to be very honest.
With Kubernetes?
With Kubernetes, like both on the technical side and on the philosophical side.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, but yeah, that's what I do now.
So it took a long time to learn to program YAML, is what you're saying?
So, to be very honest, since I have always been, always, like, for a year and a half.
Yeah.
Always, quote, like, air quote.
Yeah. Which they can see, of course. Yeah,
yeah, of course.
It'll be fine. Don't worry.
But all my history with Kubernetes hasn't been on the user side. It has been on the tooling side.
Right.
Like creating the tools, which, fortunately for me, it hasn't implied a lot of YAML for me to write.
Isolated discrete components, that kind of thing?
Yeah. I mean, my users,
yeah.
or like our users from our tools, have to use YAML.
Right.
But since I have gotten to build tools for
yeah.
them to use YAML,
right.
The process of creating these tools doesn't involve YAML. It involves support for YAML, but writing them involves like we like to say that it involves a lot of Go, but it mostly involves a lot of Bash.
Right, yeah. I love Bash.
Just let me know when I'm getting too candid about it.
I love Bash, and so we can agree that Bash is awesome, right?
No, I mean, I love Bash, but I think that a lot of what, like, our approach on the cloud native ecosystem towards Bash, it has been out of necessity, and nobody is really embracing it. They're just like, yeah, we write everything in Go. Everything's written in Go. But, like, the hidden, not so hidden secret, air quote, is, like, most of it is written in Bash.
Somebody's got to set an environment variable somewhere, right? Like, that's going to be Bash, right?
Yeah, so I think that we should embrace it more. In that way, we could build, like, more secure things and environments, like, just embracing it. But, well, that's another
A whole
story.
Other little problem. Yeah. Okay, wait, so when you say by accident, like, you are... you're an adopted engineer, right? Like an adopted software engineer, because you actually did, like, this is the easy stuff you've done in your life. What's the thing you did before that was, like, hard?
So,
right?
I was trained as a physicist, and I used to work as a physicist, but always on the computer side.
Right.
So I have never worked, like, at CERN, that is now so popular among the Kubernetes.
Oh, wow.
Because CERN uses Kubernetes.
Yeah, and Spring Boot.
And Spring Boot.
I spoke there.
Oh, this is awesome. Yeah. I didn't know that. Okay.
Yes.
Awesome. Cheers for that. But, I used to do a lot of simulations and all that stuff, but always on the computing side.
Of course. What's the alternative, though? Oh, you mean actually running the experiment in, like, the conductor or whatever?
Yeah, no. So it was, like, before that. So a lot of the experiments... mostly for quantum computing or particle physics, have to be run in computers before actually running them in real life.
So you
because you only have one shot.
Right. Otherwise, the universe implodes.
It's like or it's very expensive. Or, like, where I'm from Mexico City.
Yeah.
So in Latin America, we're not necessarily a tech or science hub. So fighting for resources in stuff like that, our equipment is, like, harder than in more developed countries.
Okay.
So often, like, scientists, like the real ones, like the theoretical and how do you say that in English? I don't remember. But the ones that are in lab.
Okay. Laboratory. Lab.
Yeah. They often have to apply to get, like, very specific equipment, or they're invited to other universities, like national or international, just in order to use that equipment. So when they're there, once they make it there, they basically have just one shot or just, like, very limited shots
cool,
to
though.
Do it. So once they're there, they have to be very sure of what they're doing.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, this is an overstatement and very simplified, but that's basically, like, the philosophy of it. So simulations are, like, super necessary for physics and chemistry and biology, like, for things that you cannot reproduce, like, you don't have the luxury to reproduce a lot.
If you do it wrong, it's like Thanos' snapping of the finger, right?
Exactly.
All of us are gone. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So,
it's
this
very
is the
expensive.
Unit test. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So, or in case of chemistry or biological chemistry, many times it involves, like, actual humans. So you don't want to mess that up. Yeah, or maybe not humans, but, like...
Or a bomb goes off or something terrible.
Or mice, or like, you don't want...
Poor mice.
Exactly.
No, not the mice.
Not the mice. So a lot of, like, these simulations are, like, it's like the staging, staging part before production. And so that's what I used to do.
Yeah.
And it was mainly with Fortran and Python.
Oh, yeah. I love Python.
Yeah, me too. But suddenly I transitioned into computer science, went into software engineer, and that's what I have been doing.
So wait, so you did Python, and now you're doing Go. Did you find a natural fit? Like, I think, I look at Go and I think, I can do that, because that's, like, it reminds me of the sort of very Spartan... You know, and they even, like, it's even the same problem with, like, you just use Go format and everything is sort of suddenly formatted exactly the same way. There's no style there.
That's a great thing.
So it's like Python. It's very rigid.
Exactly. And like so easy to read and use, yeah. even if you don't have a huge computer science background,
right.
as I didn't used to have. And so because I have always coded,
yeah.
but it's not the same parting. Like when you're like a physicist that codes,
yeah.
You don't need to know like what a tree is or stuff like that, you know?
Okay.
Like for practical purposes. I mean, there are many brilliant physicists
who
that
do.
Know, yeah, but that's not necessary for your day-to-day work.
Right.
Like there are qualities in that kind of software that are not valued in software engineering, for example. And that doesn't mean that one is better than the other. It's just like different requirements of different targets. So the way that I used Python was very for the mathematical libraries that
NumPy
it has.
NumPy and SciPy,
yeah,
and
exactly.
these kinds of things. Okay.
Yeah, which we don't have in Go.
Really?
I mean, there are many efforts, but it's not like the
well,
shiniest star.
No, even Java. No, I mean, even in,
yeah.
like if you're doing Spark, I think Python's still a better story, even though Spark itself is a JVM-based thing.
Yeah,
yeah
definitely. And like Python has really been like the very best thing after Fortran for those purposes.
Yeah, yeah.
The reason why many scientists still use like to this day Fortran is because it works. Like
it's fast.
It's fast and it does what it has to do.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't the most modern or
No. But I mean,
whatever.
You're doing math, so you know,
exactly.
Math is math.
Yeah.
Numbers are numbers.
Yeah.
Well,
so,
until they're not.
I mean, Fortran was made for that. Literally.
Yeah, yeah.
So with Python, you got all these amazing libraries for astronomy
yeah.
and for math and for...
and everything. You
yeah,
build
yeah.
user interfaces. You could build web services.
Yeah.
I was working on a program the other day that helps me process podcasts
oh.
with Python. And, you know, I love Python. It's just... It's
just, awesome.
Yeah. It's just a language I reach for. But so I keep thinking, okay, well, maybe I'll go to... Like, because for me, the interesting opportunity in Go
mm-hmm.
is being able to hack on all these, like, cloudy infrastructure pieces, right?
Yeah.
And so that's cool. And the reason that's possible is because you can do, you have an easy integration with native APIs, right?
Yeah.
So in Python, you have C types. That's cool.
Yeah. I mean, on the other hand, what Python doesn't have, or it does, but it isn't the shiniest feature,
right.
it's like concurrency and all this stuff,
oh,
like
it's
for
terrible.
Distributed systems.
In Python, yeah. You've got the GIL.
Exactly. That Go has.
They have async await now in Python 3.
Yeah.
Whatever, but like it just
yeah, yeah,
it just
yeah.
arrived the last few years.
Of
know?
Course, and they will. I'm sure I'm not expert in that field, but I'm sure they will keep like adding features or like stuff that
mm-hmm.
will make these tasks
right.
easier. Yet it wasn't created with that thing in mind, and
definitely
I think
not.
That's great.
And there's a bunch of libraries in Python that don't know about this stuff yet, of course, and they're not going to
yeah.
get modernized. And then Go has a Go's. They don't even use native threads, right? They use
yeah.
APIs down into the kernel.
Yeah.
But they wrote their own scheduler, so it's
yeah,
very
it's
built
like
discreetly.
A hybrid with like not a hybrid for the purists listening
yeah.
to this, but like some sort of green threads.
Right.
You know?
It's awesome. That's
that
good.
Are not necessarily attached to an OS process.
Right.
You can do that.
Right.
If that's your goal, but it's not necessarily
right. You have a carrier thread that
exactly.
and work gets moved on and off
yeah.
of that. Yeah. No, that's okay. That's obviously true. That's true. I mean, before everybody was all aboard on the green thread train,
mm-hmm.
right? Even before that was true, Python's threading support was terrible because you have
yeah.
the global interpreter lock.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
it wasn't even very good. Even if you're just saying, hey, this language supports operating system threads and this one does too,
mm-hmm.
people looked at Python and Ruby and they said, you know.
Yeah.
So I know a lot of people who love JRuby, for example.
Oh yeah.
Right. And
yeah,
the reason
yeah.
is because you get all the goodness of Ruby,
mm-hmm.
but you can run with at least a full feature threading
yeah.
stack, right?
With all the real power. Yeah.
Right, and it's faster. Like JRuby is faster than
mm-hmm.
than C Ruby, but the problem is, of course, with Python. Like NumPy and SciPy, that's not Python code, that's C code.
Exactly.
You can't port that to Jython, right? It doesn't work. So
I have seen Frankensteins
yeah, yeah.
trying to
I mean,
to
you
do
could,
that.
But
it's
not a portable thing. Whereas in Java, you know, a lot of the things that you see in the Java ecosystem, it's just all Java. Mm-hmm. Right? Most people don't write code that talks to native code.
Of course.
Most projects, almost
no,
never.
And there's no need.
Well, I mean, there's a need. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. Like, there's clearly a need that, you know.
I mean, there's a practical need.
Right.
But
like, how would you build a Kubernetes on top of the JVM?
Exactly.
You can't.
But
you really
like, Java is a robust enough, or that's my perception.
Yeah.
Like, for everybody that is the audience that is listening to this,
what hopes?
Like, I know how to code things in Java,
yeah.
But you don't necessarily want me to code your Java things.
Probably, definitely the same true for me. You know, you don't want me coding your Java stuff either. It's not going to end well. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
well, okay. So, okay. Good stuff. Go, go, go. We like, go, go. No.
Go, go. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm rooting for go. Go, go, land. There you go. That's what I'm
exactly. Go, land.
So, okay. So you got into that and that was the sensibility, if not the syntax, looks very familiar.
Yeah.
Coming from Python.
No, definitely. And also like the readability and the productivity that you can have, like the same way that Python is like really good for people that are just
right.
starting
yeah.
into the development world
yep.
or trying to tackle a new project or something
yeah.
like that. I think that Go is the same like for like a higher level. Don't quote me on this, but
sure.
I hope that this doesn't get taken out of context.
What? It's all there on the podcast.
Yeah. But like on, for example, the distributed systems level,
mm-hmm.
I think that even though it is not my favorite language for distributed systems, I think it helps a lot to democratize the development
right.
of like higher stuff.
Right.
It's super, super easy. Like once you like grab the spirit of Go to start being real productive at things like concurrency that
mm-hmm.
used to be like somehow like really obscure for a lot
right.
of people. And,
and especially if you're doing systems programming,
exactly.
right?
Exactly.
Like if you're doing systems programming and you need concurrency, you're dealing with C.
Yeah.
And that's a nightmare. And the alternative is you go to something very high level like Python, which
yeah.
has terrible concurrency support. You know?
Or like, this is my experience, both mine and the things that I have seen with, for example, Java code that is like nice, neat, concurrent,
mm-hmm.
and that works.
Mm-hmm. Well.
You have to be very experienced or very skilled in the language. Not even
yeah.
like in a software engineering side, like 20 years of experience. No, but like, really have to know really well the language, because like this is my experience
yeah.
like I'm not saying that this is the absolute truth, but like since it is so verbose, you have
yeah.
to it's a very huge language
yeah.
so in order to have like a very good concurrent Java code
yeah.
You have to be more experienced than what I have witnessed within the Go community.
I agree. So it's weird that you say that. So again, if you look at Python
yeah
right or Lisp, right? These are
at
two. Like Lisp is like the ultimate, it's the easiest grammar that I can think of,
yeah.
right? And then Python's close. Not,
mm-hmm.
It's not the same. It's a little bit more complicated.
Yeah,
but
I love Lisp.
Yeah. but then you look at like, so most people in the JVM community
mm-hmm.
think, well, Java's like the simplest of the grammars.
Yeah.
Right? It's not actually that verbose a language.
No.
Because it's just a very, like, you know, you can't do much with it. You've got objects.
Mm-hmm.
You've got methods.
Classes, yeah. No, I actually love that structure.
But,
I love it.
But like on the other hand, you don't have top level functions.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have coroutines yet. We don't have
yes.
We didn't for a long time. We didn't have first class lambda. So all these really interesting things that you can do in other languages that require more complex grammars.
Right. And what I have seen now that you're mentioning the version,
yeah,
it's like I have seen like more recently, people. Like, that are really, really good at the Java ecosystem.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm using this word very loosely, but, like, judging
yeah.
other Java programmers for not being aware of what, like, Java 8 has or, you
Java
know?
12 now, yeah.
Exactly. And I understand that it's important because they're very important new features, but at the same time, it's like, in Go, like since the very first version, you are able to do very high power stuff
mm-hmm.
with very little code and with very like air quote again, very little knowledge.
Sure.
As opposed with Java that you have to be like aware of every single increase and be aware of what the community is about and all that.
We hope. Well, I mean, so again, I guess what I'm trying to say is the grammar itself is for most people in the JVM, not such a big deal. Like if you go to Scala,
yes.
Scala is like C++, right? There's 1,000 ways to write the same thing that way. But we mentioned threading, and I completely agree. Like,
yeah.
Raw actual threading in the JVM,
it's
like
hard.
Nobody knows how to do threading correctly,
no.
Right? And there's a famous thing in the JVM where was it an atomic lock or something?
Uh-huh.
No, there's something. I'm trying to remember what it was. There was some, or maybe it was a synchronized, a double, a reentrant locks maybe, something like that. There's some thing, some pattern that people wanted to do for concurrency, double checked locks. Was that it? It was something that you would do in a concurrent program that we had understood would work if you did A, B, and C.
Okay.
And then Java 8 maybe or 5, one of these major releases that came out in recent memory.
Yeah.
One of these major releases came out, and when that came out, there was, you know, in the little asterisk, a little subtext was, oh, by the way, we realized that this was fundamentally flawed. It could never have worked. And so if you wrote concurrent programs built on that, they're broken, right? So we fixed it, but everything before. So basically, even the JVM designers couldn't get concurrency right.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to, you know, the JVM has general purpose concurrency, but the prevailing wisdom is that you shouldn't use that directly, right? Whereas with Go routines, you don't have general purpose concurrency. You have one paradigm, which is I have message passing.
Exactly.
And so as long as I'm forced into this confined paradigm, I get good results.
Yeah.
But you can't express every algorithm.
And also, like, it was created with that in mind. Like,
yeah.
Go was created with that in mind. So there are a lot of people in the Go community that say, that like to say that don't use Go's concurrency just for the sake of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand their point. But it's like, no, like, go ahead, use it, or at least write software that even if you don't need it at the moment,
right.
Like, that is ready
to be
used at some point. Otherwise, you would have to rewrite it, and what's the point of using Go? But
right.
That's my philosophy.
And there's only one way to do concurrency, so it's like, why wouldn't you write it with that in mind?
Exactly,
you
exactly.
Know?
And you already have the Go routines there.
Right.
You don't have to change a lot of stuff.
Right. You're going to send a message, might as well send a message.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I like that. That's really cool. And, you know, in the JVM community, we have Project Loom.
Yeah, I have heard about it.
Which is coming up, hopefully, in the next few years. We don't know. And that'll bring coroutines and suspend, you know, fibers, basically, green threads like that. So
yes.
We'll see. I don't know. One day, hopefully. But in the meantime, you know, we're a fair ways away from being able to build something like a Kubernetes on top of the JVM.
I mean, I think every community has its own, like, I like to name it,
sweet spot, maybe?
Jewel of the crown.
Yeah. Right.
Like, I think, from what I see from the outside,
yeah.
Like, for example, in my very humble opinion, Go is not the best language for web development, yet. Java, I think, is like the king of that.
Well,
it's
up there. JavaScript and Java seem to be popular.
Yeah, but I mean, try to find something like Spring out there.
Hey, you don't have to convince me. I'm just saying you're right. I agree. There's certain use cases for which each language is purpose.
No, and I totally understand your point,
yeah.
But we're having like a different level of conversation here.
Right.
And so...
So is it fair to say Go is closer to C and systems programming world, whereas JVM is... The JVM languages, including Kotlin and Java.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. There
are
like
apps.
A couple of projects like for Go web development that are totally worth their salt.
Sure.
But for example, I'm taking just me as an example that I have no experience in web development and trying to take over web development just with the existing Go efforts. For me, it's like practically impossible.
Right.
Like compared to trying to use something like Spring or in the case of Elixir, the Phoenix, Phoenix thing,
that's nice
the
stuff
Phoenix
too, yeah.
framework, it's so easy,
yeah.
like to be productive.
And it's perfect. You think about only the things that really matter to what you're trying
exactly.
to do, and as much as possible is alleviated to your overhead. I love that. And Elixir is awesome. So Elixir, for those of you who are listening, is like they built a language on top of Erlang, basically. They compiles down to things that run on the Erlang. And by the way, Joe Earle just passed away. So,
yeah.
You know, we should
Joe Armstrong, yeah.
Yeah, Joe Earl on Twitter. See, I think of people's names.
No, everybody used to, like,
You're Maria Fibonacci, too, yeah. Right?
Everybody has me, like, stored in their contact book as Maria.
Right, yeah. And I'm like, so why is that? So, okay, so your Twitter handle is at Maria
Fibonacci.
Like a Fibonacci series.
Yeah, but none of them are either my real name nor last name.
Yeah.
It's a very lame story. It's super old, so I don't want to share that.
Never mind. Anywho, moving on. But anyway, I've known you for years, but I still, like, I think of your Twitter handle,
mm-hmm.
right? And then I have this, like, weird thought, like, oh, that's, I have to follow a pointer to the real name.
I mean, right? If you call me Maria or Maria Fibonacci, I will respond to that.
I had this brain fart just earlier today. I was like, I called somebody by their Twitter handle instead of their real name. Like, oh,
no, but like going back to Joe Armstrong, everybody like would ask me if his real name was Joe Erlang. Like, yes. Yeah, sure.
He was born with it in mind.
With it in mind, yeah.
Mama Earl knew that one day he was going to be a beam of light.
Yeah. Well, he was a physicist too, by the way.
Oh, snap. Yeah. Physicist connect in the house. Yeah. That's cool. Well, anyway, rest in peace. Obviously, he's,
amazing,
you know,
work, amazing legacy.
Right. And that whole, I think that whole, so you know RabbitMQ, or we have a broker.
Yes.
That's in Erlang, right? So we have a large contingent of people that work on that and care about that community.
Yeah, we both know Alvaro, right?
Yeah, Alvaro Videla.
Old town.
Old friend, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, he's a old town. Yeah, yeah. There you go. But old underscore sound on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
I interviewed him when he joined my team.
Right? Oh.
Back in 2011 or 12 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Right, so... So he was actually on the same team with me doing Cloud Foundry advocacy years ago. You know, I was the spring advocate on Cloud Foundry, right? And then he was, I don't know, the PHP guy? I don't know. Like, it was, he was the RabbitMQ guy, right? So at that point, how'd that work? Okay, so he, Monadic, you know Monadic?
Yes.
Alexis Richardson?
Yes.
He was, at some point, we acquired RabbitMQ.
Mm-hmm.
Alexis Richardson came in, and then under his watch, the team developed, and we hired. We wanted to hire Alvaro, and what happened? Gosh, I think they wanted to have him, but we got him as an advocate first. So that was like his way into the system, and he did great work.
He's really good at that.
Oh, he's great. He's amazing, and. He's good at everything.
That's why I always tell him. Yeah.
I don't mean to. I didn't mean to say he's just good at advocacy.
At
everything.
But he's
also contributing.
Really good, but he's stellar at
helping
people and advocating.
Yeah. And so then, for whatever reason, he went to a pure play engineering role and was on the RabbitMQ team,
doing
hardcore engineering for years. You know, and it's like. So cool, like the
so smart.
Yeah, but was he doing Elixir as well? Is he into Elixir now?
Not now. I mean, he's still in the community and all that because he has earned it.
Yeah,
but no, he's at Microsoft now.
I know,
doing
cloud advocate.
Yeah, for Azure and the European team.
Yeah,
and I heard like he's doing great.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's cool. So anyway, rest in peace. Joe Armstrong, yeah, that's
Earl.
Joe Earl, I knew the Twitter handle. Getting back to that, you worked on Kubernetes for a while.
Yes.
Right, so where were you when you were doing that?
Oh, okay, so I joined CoreOS.
Yes.
With another purpose in mind. I was hired as a distributed systems engineer,
mm-hmm.
and to focus more like on our testing infrastructure.
Nice.
And also like for different distributed systems. But I joined at a very specific time where like all the new hires were suddenly like sent into Kubernetes development, but because that was our strategy, like to get money.
I like strategies like that. People, I like money.
People had to get paid.
Yeah. Imagine.
And that was actually like the ultimate reason why we got acquired by Red Hat.
Right.
Because Coros.
So what did they do? What was Coros's claim?
So containers and all that, but like the reason why we think we got acquired is because we used to do this Kubernetes for enterprise distribution.
Yeah.
That was called Tectonic.
Mm-hmm.
And for a while, we were, well, CoreOS was the leader on that matter.
Right.
At some point, like, Kubernetes is a very young project.
Still,
for the growth that it has had.
Absolutely.
It's a very young project.
2014, right? It was when we first heard about it in the community, so it's really new.
Yeah. And at the beginning, it was really, really hard just to install it or like to get a grasp of it. So in the beginning, I wasn't part of CoreOS back then, but mm-hmm. this is the story that everybody told me. Basically, at the beginning, it was just CoreOS helping people understand how Kubernetes worked.
Okay, like a consulting business or something?
Sort of.
Okay.
But then with time, we started adding features like the Prometheus integration.
Right.
Like an additional networking and security layer and stuff like that.
Already? Yeah.
So it was like Kubernetes with better stuff.
Nice. We like better.
Yeah, better.
I'm all about
and
better.
Also like with a full team of sales engineers, support team.
Yeah.
Engineers like trying to like doing upstream work. It was an amazing team. Like it has been the best team that I have ever worked at without any offense to any other teams.
Kubernetes
like,
engineers with pluck. I love it.
Yeah, no, it was amazing. An amazing team of like the smartest people I've ever met.
I'm sure the feeling is mutual, by the way.
I don't want to talk about that. But, so at some point, as far as I understand, there weren't many competitors. But as soon as Kubernetes started exploding everywhere, of course, like the natural cycle of software, like everybody started like starting their own startups
mm-hmm.
on that matter, doing competitor distributions, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So,
we've got one.
I know.
Yeah.
But I say this with all my love, like in all honesty, I really think that like CoreOS was way ahead of many other distributions. And so at some point, I'm sure there were many other reasons, but like as far as I understand and my team understands, Tectonic disappeared as a product once we got acquired by Red Hat.
Mm-hmm.
But like the central pieces, like the pieces that were like critical for our product to be more successful than other products, were adopted by OpenShift.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So
that's cool.
I don't know at what point in the adoption process they are at right now, but that was the main idea.
That's
and
good.
So that's amazing. Like to
so it's
have
a validation, right? You built this amazing thing.
Yeah.
That has now. So they acquired the people and the tech, or they did acquire the tech and the people, whatever.
Yes.
So it's, a lot of times it's either one or the other, and that's very unfortunate, you know. So I'm glad it's both. You know?
It wasn't both.
Right. Oh.
Because like most of the team is now in other opportunities.
Well, I'm sure they're happy.
But
hopefully somewhere happy.
But no. But at least like on the CoreOS epoch. Oh, and also a very important player in all of this was Kelsey Hightower.
Yeah.
Like the Kelsey Hightower that a lot of people now know as the, like, I don't want to call any names, but we all know who Kelsey Hightower
is. Kelsey Hightower, yeah. There's the blue sky out there and there's Kelsey Hightower. These are things I both identify as facts.
So I wouldn't say anything else because I don't want to get in trouble with other people who are not Kelsey Hightower.
Yeah.
But he basically built a lot of things for CoreOS and also not only the software, but the awareness and like being the helpful person that he is.
Yeah.
Like, he would used to go all the way over, like, every single conference training to spread the word.
Right.
Actually, that's why I heard about Coro as to begin with.
Okay.
Because I saw his talk, like, I think at GopherCon or something, okay, the earliest GopherCons in Salera. So, yeah, he was a very important key player, like, not only for the company, but for the whole ecosystem.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's basically sort of the story, and...
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And so, now, so we're, you know, on our side, we're, we have, what do we have? In the Pivotal side, we've got Cloud Foundry, which is a platform, right?
Yes.
And Kelsey, you know, he talks all the time about how you should use a platform, right? You should, you don't use regular Kubernetes.
Mm-hmm.
You're gonna have to build stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, but then there are these workloads that are not, they don't fit in, these are square pegs that don't fit in round holes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever,
yeah,
you know, right? So there are certain workloads that just aren't gonna work in an opinionated platform,
obviously,
for which, of course, I think Kubernetes is an obvious and natural,
mm-hmm,
fit. And we've done some work on the Pivotal side with Knative. What do you think about that stuff, the Knative stuff coming out of Google?
Yeah, okay, so I don't want to get in trouble again.
Oh, okay.
But
well, if you're worried,
no.
We can talk about something else.
No, but I think this overlaps with another opinion that I really wanted to talk about.
Okay.
That is, like, in all the experience that I have seen, like, not only myself, but my friends and my colleagues,
yeah,
working on this environment, to be honest, I don't care which one do you pick, but I honestly think that the best way to go as of now, when you decided and you know that you need Kubernetes,
mm-hmm,
and that it will actually make your life easier,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
is, like, to go with a custom distribution by any company. Let that be Pivotal,
Red
Google,
Hat, sure,
Red Hat, AWS,
okay,
and all that. Because trying to do that thing manually is...
Oh, yeah. No, it's
like,
crazy. Well, and the thing is, I'm so impressed with people like you who got in early enough to be able to keep all the moving pieces in your head, right?
I know, like,
but
to
now,
be
look at the Cloud Native Computing Foundation's...
Yeah.
The ecosystem chart with, like, 500 logos that are like... Oh.
That's a lot. And it's very controversial because, like, a lot of people don't agree a lot with that. But I have personally seen smaller projects, like, for example, Kubernetes.
Mm-hmm.
Prometheus. That could really grow thanks to their CNCF affiliation.
Right.
Because thanks to that, they got, like, resources that I'm sure that they would have gotten them, like, in other ways,
mm-hmm,
because they're very smart people. But thanks to the CNCF support, like, Prometheus is what it is right now,
yeah,
in terms of marketing, and that it is everywhere,
right,
and all that.
Prometheus
so,
is a, for those in the audience that are listening, Prometheus is a boss sauce piece of software that's designed to support accumulating metrics.
Observability. And,
yeah, and you can use Micrometer, a project from Pivotal, to talk to it very conveniently from Spring Boot Apps. So,
yeah.
Big plug. Big fan of Prometheus and Atlas from Netflix.
Yeah, me too. And one of the downsides that I think it exists, though, for all these foundations is, like, now that we're talking about Prometheus and other tooling for the cloud native ecosystem, is that I have met a lot of people that think that these tools are only available for Kubernetes. And
Prometheus?
And other tools like,
uh-huh,
etcd, Prometheus,
oh, yeah,
and others. Because they're, like, CNCF has become, like, synonym for,
yeah,
Kubernetes for a lot of people, which I don't know if it's intentional or not.
Well, at first that was, I thought at the beginning they should have just called it the Kubernetes Foundation, right? Because that's what it was, right? In the beginning, that's what it felt like.
Yeah, yeah.
But then,
yeah,
they added these other things that are like satellite technologies.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's good or bad, but, like, I want projects like Prometheus to succeed. Obviously, I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
So, but on the other hand, like, you know.
Yeah,
they got
a lot of people think that the only thing that these projects are useful for is like just Kubernetes, and it's just like, no, you can use them like for distributed systems everywhere.
I do demos all the time.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's amazing.
So, and I, you know, speaking of, so one company I love who does stuff that works great in the Kubernetes ecosystem, but also as well in the Cloud Foundry ecosystem, as well as any ecosystem, is, I just lost the name, HashiCorp.
HashiCorp, yeah.
Love them. Just love, I mean, just what a crazy cool group.
We used to use Terraform.
Yeah.
Like provisioning stuff for our
works well.
CoreOS.
Yeah. Stuff. Yeah. And console is amazing. And there's just, and these are pieces of infrastructure that I think have become very popular in the age of Kubernetes. And so, wait, let me hide this.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Hold on.
It's fine.
There.
No.
These are very interesting pieces of infrastructure that I think have been become popular in the age of Kubernetes. And of course, people, I think they sometimes associate them with Kubernetes, but they're not. Like, you can use console and you can use whatever, completely independent of all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting place to be in history. So what do you think about, like, have you looked at the Knative stuff though? That's what I'm like, the Knative stuff from, it's more like an on ramp. It's like a platform for Kubernetes.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
I'm familiar with it, but I honestly, since I left Red Hat, for a while I was honestly very fed up of it, of the ecosystem and all that. So I am really aware of the. I'm very aware of the. Tooling space, which I was honestly very sick of at some point, because there's a lot of money at stake in this.
In open source? No.
Not only in open source.
No.
But like for the Kubernetes Cloud Native thing.
Veronica.
But
it's driven by merit. And it's driven by community and goodness and merit, okay?
No.
How dare you besmirch this industry?
That was not my point, Josh. My point was that since there is a lot of money involved, there are a lot of efforts for pushing tooling around the ecosystem. Tooling that, on the software engineering perspective, just the nerd perspective, without any revenues in mind, are optional. optional.
Yeah.
Because Kubernetes wasn't built
for
with
profit.
That in mind.
Yeah.
You know? But I obviously know that we all have to get paid.
Yeah.
So everybody's pushing their tooling, like their Kubernetes and cloud native tooling, like to become popular or necessary or whatever. So I think that that generates a lot of bloat on the software engineering side. But just on the code side and the complexity on things like that, performance and all that, and that you have to master, like, this is my opinion, that things that are supposed to make your life easier with all this tooling ecosystem that people are made to believe that is super necessary and mandatory and critical for the projects, it's just adding more complexity for the sake of it.
Right.
So that's my opinion. So I was really, really fed up of that.
Interesting. Yep. Yep.
With that.
Sorry to hear that.
It's fine.
Yeah.
So I'm telling you all of this because I am aware of many projects that I thought that I wanted to really leave that, that space. I was just like, I'm going to do something else.
Oh,
I want to become a kernel engineer.
Right.
Or,
yeah. Just do something
know?
More.
I'm just done with this.
Right.
I'm so tired. But, or maybe distributed systems, but like the real ones, old school ones that more in the telecommunication side that don't have to do anything with Kubernetes and this crazy thing. I used to think that.
Right.
But to be very honest, like there are many, many things that I do like about this world.
Yep.
And after taking some time off, I was ready to come back with a fresh view and a fresh spirit and all that. And I was like, you know what? I actually really enjoy this. And I still think all those things. I still think that a lot of tooling is not necessary or not useless. Please don't mistake that. I think all of it is super useless, but for the right cases.
Useful.
Exactly.
Not useless.
Yeah,
said super useless.
Super useful, yeah. Sorry.
No, it's okay.
I think they're super useful
yeah.
for the right cases, and they totally should exist.
Sure, totally.
Yet, I think that with the wrong communication,
yeah.
they still generate a lot of blood.
Absolutely.
But now I know how to navigate that.
That's what I admire. Like, you've been, so for you, you've been to the, like, the bottom of the Kubernetes stack up to the top again,
yeah.
and then back again. But I think most people don't want, how long did it take you to get comfortable with that entire stack, right?
Like a year and a half, I think.
And that was working at it full time. Most people don't
yes.
have that luxury.
Yes.
So, like, I really think using Kubernetes is very different from having to administer and deploy and manage Kubernetes.
Exactly.
And so if you can just be a user,
mm-hmm.
that's way more pleasant. You know, that's why, like, PKS is so, I mean, I'm sure that there's, to some extent, the proposition is true for others, but PKS for our users has become this sort of like,
yeah,
I just want to use it. Just somebody else babysits.
Exactly.
It.
No, the other day I was talking to people, like, involved in all the PKS and all the
yeah.
tooling around, the optional tooling all around
right.
it, and I was actually very excited.
Yeah.
Like, this is awesome. I didn't know this existed. And even, again, if I know it's optional,
right.
I think it's an amazing tool.
Right.
And I immediately went with other people that I know that they're using Kubernetes as customers.
Yeah.
And I was like, you have to try this.
Right. It's an option. I mean, it's like, I think anybody who can get, I hope people use PKS, but a curated Kubernetes, I think that's the
key. No, but
key,
honestly, like,
anything.
Specifically PKS,
right.
I think that they have an amazing philosophy right now. Like, the engineers involved in there,
yeah.
Since I was a bit jaded and super biased against
right.
all these distributions, I was just like, stop it. So when I talked to these people, I was not expecting a lot.
Right. Oh, okay. Fair enough.
I mean,
well,
that's
what we like to do. We like to set the bar very low.
I was not expecting bad things at all. But I was not expecting to be surprised.
Hey, right on.
Not on the technical level, just on
yeah,
the Kubernetes level.
That's, I get it. Yeah, yeah.
And then I started talking to them,
mm-hmm,
and I
mm-hmm.
was just like, oh, wait, this excites
that's,
me a lot.
Me too, by the way. And the reason, for different reasons, because I've never had to plumb the depths of the code, and I don't think I could.
I think you could.
I'd come back from the mountaintop with a beard and
mm-hmm.
tablets, and I'd be crazy, you know? I like using PKS. I think I haven't had a lot of experience with other distributions,
mm-hmm.
but from my limited experience with PKS, it's just nice that there's a curated, like, if I don't have to worry about who's running it.
Yeah.
And it's easy for me to snap things into place. That's great.
Because
I'm fine with that.
Because I think that the different thing that I perceived from them
mm-hmm.
was that they were not trying to sell me, even as an engineer, they were not trying to sell me, like, functionality or
right.
like how easy it is.
Right.
Because I take it for granted that all of these distributions should sell that.
Right.
Like, making
yeah.
it easier. Instead of bragging features in front of me, they were super nerdy about it. They
right.
like, they are really passionate about
right.
it. Of course they have to make money out of it.
Sure.
And I have no problem with that. But their main takeaway from the whole thing that they
right.
told me was not
right. They're not pushing it.
Numbers of users
right,
or
yeah.
revenue or
right.
features or crushing the competitors
yeah.
or something. No.
It's technical innovation.
It is technical innovation. Exactly.
And,
that's the word.
And I think, at least I hope that's what the case. So one thing I've in Kubernetes, I think there's this move towards componentization, if you will, like
mm-hmm.
it should be easier to get an image, you know, like if you think of Kubernetes kind of like, you know, using the foundation helps
mm-hmm.
me think about, when I think about the fact that it's a foundation, it really does remind me of Linux, which
yes.
has a foundation, and there's a bunch of components that somebody has to pull together into a distribution,
yeah.
and then above that, it should be very easy for me to deploy packages. So I think, you know, you look at things like Helm,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a big deal, right?
Yeah.
These things are a big deal that didn't exist when Kubernetes first came out.
Yes.
And
no.
now you've got this reusable
mm-hmm.
marketplace, right?
Yeah.
And I think I think these are better metaphors than, like, regular Docker containers, for example. They go many steps beyond,
yeah. And I still think that we're in baby steps.
Yeah.
Here.
So what's the next big thing? What would you like to see
Something that maybe this will be very vague for some, but something that integrates like a lot of the tooling, because like as much as I like it and I have learned to love it again from a new perspective, and at the same time I have learned, I have met more users and from the real life that used to have other concerns in their teams that they're not cloud engineers or anything like that, but that they decided to adopt all this new cloud native way of thinking.
Cloud engineers. Did you tell them it's all based on duct tape and bash?
No, but I, to be honest, I have seen them struggle a lot.
Yeah.
And most of this struggle isn't because they're dumb or they're smart. It doesn't have to do with that. It has to do with that they don't know how to tell apart from the main Kubernetes distribution and the external tooling. They think that the whole Kubernetes distribution is made out of all of these components that they have to learn.
It's a monolith.
Yes, and that they feel like, this is my experience. Yeah, yeah. You know? That, and they're amazing engineers. They're super, super senior engineers that are really frustrated. That's the word. Like, they feel really frustrated with all and overwhelmed with all the things that they think they have to learn.
Right.
Because there are all these blog posts out there telling, you should use
ABC,
you should use this, you should use that. And maybe it's not really necessary for all of them. And so they don't know how to tell this apart. So I would really like to see something that, and I have talked to a lot of people about it. We think that the future of Kubernetes, like maybe not in the very like
near term, long term.
Yeah, like near term. Yeah. But at some point we would wish that a lot of people use Kubernetes and they don't know that they're using Kubernetes. You know what I mean?
A platform.
Yeah, a platform, something that really like condense.
Yeah.
Like, sort of like what AWS is doing. I think that they're really good at just like hitting the next button, you know, like next, and you have everything set up. But like in a more condensed way, like where you have like a lot of tooling and you basically select what you need or you don't need or whatever, and like easily useful and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I would love to see that. I think that my main problem, air quote, with Kubernetes was that.
Yeah.
That it was supposed to simplify people's lives, and now all of a sudden it was more complicated.
And there's a backlash. I'm seeing people. So, okay. We saw people go to microservices. I think microservices are interesting. But there's also, there's a slight course correction where it's now, I think people are coming back and saying, you know what? There are certain use cases for which monoliths are just fine, and we should, you know, same thing with the Kubernetes sort of discussion. I think if you're just building a website that's serving some department use case,
you know,
like it's 500 users a month, you don't need to deploy a Kubernetes
you
cluster.
You just
don't need it. Just deploy your web server, you know, whatever. Get an EC2 image or whatever.
Oh, no. And
you
know what I'm fighting right now?
Or host it on a cloud that somebody else manages, like PWS.
Yeah, absolutely. No, but right now my like biggest fight with users is like when I tell them like, maybe you don't need Kubernetes.
Yeah.
And they tell me, maybe you don't understand Kubernetes.
Really? I don't, huh?
Yeah, they have told me that either to my face or in Twitter or in feedback. It's like, maybe you don't understand Kubernetes. And it's like, no. It's like, I understand it like so much that I'm telling you that you don't need that.
Take my advice.
Yeah,
don't hurt
but
yourself.
Well, everybody wants to join.
Oh.
Like the hit.
We're tribal.
Yeah.
We're all tribal.
Absolutely.
Well, my friend, I have learned way too much. I have learned so much. I have more questions than answers, but we're kind of like,
fine.
Yeah,
this was supposed to be like a 20-minute.
Yeah, we should do another one soon.
Why do we gossip too much?
Yeah, darn the gossip. Well, there's too much to catch up on. So here's the thing: because you and I aren't in the same like I'm in the Spring Java community. You know?
And I love your community, by the
way. And I love your community.
Just wish I were like smart as all of you are.
No, likewise. The same. I feel the same, you know?
To be able to manage all the Java ecosystem.
Exactly. I wish I could navigate the entire Go ecosystem. So it's nice. We don't get to... There's programming conferences, that kind of thing, like where it's like the language is what drives people there. And then there's Go conferences, right? And then at some point, you kind of go up one level to like these more meta conferences. So as you and I talk, we're sat in a lovely hotel by the lovely lakeshore area of Chicago, Illinois for this Go2 conference, right?
Yes.
And that's a great conference. It's a great show. There's QCon. You know, these like high-level ones that we go to that are like, there's not a... Yes, it's okay if there's Spring, but or Go or whatever. But the focus isn't that. It's how to solve this problem, right? And so I love it when we get to bump into each other. As always, a friend.
And you're always so busy.
Well, you too. You're like you're always in some other country. It's like I follow you on Twitter, and you're just everywhere. So
likewise.
Yeah, I'm super happy to get to talk to you. I follow you on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle?
@Maria
yeah.
_ Fibonacci, like the Fibonacci mathematician series. Yeah.
Okay. And is there any place else that you think people should be able to find you?
Instagram.
Good idea.
More like fun on Instagram.
Way to be my first guest to promote their Instagram.
I have to tell you that my Instagram is barely technical. It's just
that's fine.
But it's more fun. Yeah. Because since we get popular on Twitter, you're not allowed to tweet like more like candid stuff,
right?
Because everybody will pile up against you.
Right.
But Instagram is like more relaxed.
You. Yeah.
But you can find me there at @vero from Veronica.
Mm-hmm.
LOP from Lopez.
Okay.
G from my second last name.
Oh, that's so cool.
So it's VeroLopG.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
Follow me there.
I will. And I think everybody else should too. My kid will approve.
Yeah.
She's all about the Instagram, and I'm like, I'm not that cool.
Now I'm a millennial.
Yeah, I'm not cool.
You are.
You know, whatever. Anyway, all right.
Thank you
my
so
friend.
Much.
Thank you. A Beautiful Podcast is produced by me, Josh Long. I do these podcasts because I believe that everything we do in software is for and made better by people. I want to hear from you. I'm josh@joshlong.com by email or @starbuxman on Twitter, where, of course, my direct messages are wide open. Do you have guest ideas, topic suggestions, feedback? Don't hesitate to reach out. If you like the show, then please consider rating it on iTunes and leaving a review, as it really helps the show. I sampled music from Steve Combs's Them from Morning in Springtime and Steve Combs's Small Victory, both of which are licensed under a Creative Commons license. I'm trying to hire production assistants to make the production of this podcast easier. I want to make sure that we can add things like show notes and transcripts and just generally do more. If you would like to advertise on the show, then please reach out to me. And if you can't or don't want to advertise but would like to otherwise support the show, then please consider supporting me at patreon.com, patreon.com/Josh Long for as low as $4 a month. Thanks again. No harm came to any seasons in the making of this podcast.